everybody. What's going on? Rob Sestanino here, and we are back with a night number two of our hypothetically speaking Big Brother preview of people that we may or may not be seeing on the upcoming cast of Big Brother All-Stars. We are going through all of the potential names that are being swirled and rumored about by the various different sources. And as we're hearing some more smoke about what's coming out of the Big Brother streets, we will go ahead and give you more previews about people. We got a great one today. We're doing all these podcasts. You're going to hear about two potential people who may be in the Big Brother cast today. We're going to talk about the hypothetical return of Ian Terry. Of course, Taryn will be with me for both of these conversations. So me and Taryn are going to be speaking with Melissa Denny and newcomer Asia Welch about Ian Terry. Then we're going to talk about the return of Bailey Dayton, fresh off of The Challenge. We're going to talk about Bailey with Kirsten McInnes, and another newcomer from the class of 2020, Sosa E. Holler, is going to be with us to talk about Bailey. So very excited about that. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast to make sure that you don't miss a preview of these hypothetical, well, the conversations are real, but they are about the hypothetical returns of these Big Brother house guests. You can go to robhasawebsite.com/iTunes to make sure you subscribe. Or we also appreciate it if you go to ratethispodcast.com/RHAP. All right, I'm really pumped up for this one as we are going to preview the potential, hypothetically speaking, return of the champion of Big Brother 14. That would be our friend Ian Terry coming back to Big Brother potentially and here to talk about it with us. We've got a great panel starting off with a man who's been with us every step of the way, Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
Very happy. Big Brother 14 is probably my specialty of specialties when it comes to seasons. So I'm very prepared to talk about Ian.
Taryn, is there anybody else that's in this hypothetical cast that has done a Taryn show interview with you?
hold on. I've tried Memphis. He did not get back to me. I've tried Kaser. He did not get back to me. Okay. I've tried Tyler.
Yeah.
Lots
no
of
luck on that
tried,
one,
but I don't think so. Yeah.
All right. We've got to repost the link to that. Taryn's conversation with Ian Terry, the potential hypothetical 2-time Big Brother returnee, here to talk about Ian as well. A woman who I'm sure at some point has podcast with Ian Terry. Please welcome Melissa Denny.
We're back. And by we're back, I mean me. I'm back.
Yes.
To talk about Big Brother.
Yes. Well, I just podcast with you the other day.
That's true, but it wasn't about Big Brother.
I guess so.
So this is very exciting for me. I'm so pumped to be back. I can't wait to talk about everything. But I mean, obviously today we're talking about Ian. I actually don't know if I've been on a podcast with Ian.
Somebody will find it on
Twitter. I don't think I have.
If you have.
Yeah. If I have, someone will find it. But I don't think I have because I think I don't know. I just don't remember.
He might have left before you started.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
But he's done appearances and has come back.
I feel like I would remember that, though.
Yeah.
I feel like that would be
Yeah, maybe not recently. Maybe not recently. All right. But we are very lucky today to have a woman. I don't believe she's ever podcast with Ian Terry, but she's podcasting here with us today. I'm very excited to welcome another member of the class of 2020. Asia Welch is here. Asia, how are you?
Hello. I am doing amazing. I'm so glad to be podcasting with you guys, especially because I've been listening to RHAP since like season 16 of Big Brother. So I am so pumped to be here and then to just be talking about Big Brother. I'm over the moon.
Okay. Well, really excited to have you here with us. Can you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself so they can get to know you?
Yeah, of course. So I, like Rob said, my name is Asia. A lot of people see it and mispronounce it, but Rob said it wonderfully.
Oh, thank you,
yeah, it sounds like the continent. And I am 28 years old. I live in Houston, Texas. I love reality TV.
I believe Ian Terry lived there at one point, right?
He does. Yeah. You know what? He might steal. I think he is, because I saw that he was hanging out with Jeff from Big Brother. Yeah. And he lives in Houston.
BB17 Jeff.
Yes. BB17. Yeah. Not to be confused. Yeah. BB17 Jeff. Yeah. I think Ian still lives in Houston.
Okay.
But, yeah. So I love reality TV. I work in corporate America for a living. So of course I'm at home. So now I just get the opportunity to, you know, spend all my free time watching reality TV. And when I'm not watching reality TV, I'm playing drums, doing escape rooms, and just watching other television. So,
okay. Are you doing escape rooms even during the quarantine? Are you able to do Zoom escape rooms?
So I haven't. There are virtual escape rooms that I've been trying to see, like, what's worth the cost, really, you know?
Yeah.
But other than that, just doing free stuff that's online. I haven't gone to an actual escape room since the pandemic started. A lot have opened in my area, but I'm like, that's really risky. So
that's risky.
I feel like everybody's trying to escape the room at this point.
Right. I was wondering about those virtual escape rooms, because I was thinking, like, it'd be kind of cool. But then I was like, well, it's a little weird that, like, you'd be talking to your friends or something, like a moderator or someone would be like hidden listening in. But I guess that's what they do in regular escape rooms anyway. So exactly. I don't know.
Working in Big Brother House. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Exactly. That's true.
Okay. All right. Let's talk about Ian Terry. How cool is this? Ian Terry coming back. Terry, are you surprised Ian Terry would play Big Brother again?
Not really. When I thought about Ian as a potential person to be asked back, I think that he probably would have said no to anything other than All Stars. I think that my thought process was, I think he's kind of over it to a degree, but the inner fan in him is going to leap at the idea of Kacer, Janelle, Dr. Will on original All Stars. This is All Stars 2. We've all been waiting for it for so long. I think that's what's catching him here. It's All Stars. Okay. I'll do All Stars.
Yeah. So I actually have an answer from Ian on that. Not from me, but I went and I looked at his past AMA on Reddit, and someone asked him, if you were asked to be on a season of Big Brother All Stars, would you accept the invite? And he said, absolutely. I'd go back into the house in 10 seconds. As Dan said, anytime, any day, anywhere. That's what he said. But that was 6 years ago. But still.
That was 6 years ago.
Okay, 6 years ago.
But still.
Yeah, so.
It is, you know.
Adria, I guess my shock to see Ian Terry go back doesn't come from, you know, 2012 Ian Terry or 2013 Ian Terry. But as Ian has grown since he played Big Brother with now, 8 years ago when it was that summer that he played in Big Brother 14, that he has really gone from being like a uber fan of Big Brother to a feeling that to the point where I'm not even sure if he's had been watching the show, and it's been a while since he's even come on and to do a podcast with me. So I did feel as though he had become very disenchanted with the show.
Exactly. A lot of people stay so engaged throughout the years, and you see them tweet, you see them post on Instagram. But Ian, it's been 8 years since he played the game of Big Brother. And so he's a completely different man now. Like, if I think back, you know, 8 years ago, I was a completely different person. And so, you know, if you think about the type of player he was during Big Brother 14 and just thinking that fan, like, this was a guy who could name every evictee in order up until the time he played. And so I'm just really curious to see what his approach will be. I was also doing some Instagram creeping and saw that as of March, he had a girlfriend. And so that little spin is a little bit, you know, different, because, you know, he had that thing going on with Ashley. And so we'll see what his game plan is. I just think we're going to see a completely different guy.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I thought it was interesting because, like, his whole storyline from the first time he played was like this, like, nerd who, like, was socially awkward and couldn't fit in and, like, was kind of timid, to, like, this, like, champion who was, you know, like, saying get to Stefan to, like, Boogie and stuff like that, you know, like, he had basically, like, that was the transformation. But now it's like, okay, well, now he's this champion, like, that storyline can't be the same. Like, he can't come in and be like, oh, I don't know, I'm like this awkward guy, and, like, everyone would be like, yeah, but you won and we saw what you could do, and we know that you can, like, backstab and just, like, play hard and win a bunch of, like, competitions. Like, so I do feel like it's going to be really cool if he's on to see this like whole other Ian.
It will be interesting if people even remember that. Like, of course we remember he won, you know, four HOHs and he was this dominant player, but it is so overshadowed by the fact that he beat Dan. Like this was Dan's season. Of course, season 10, he did amazing, but you know, Dan's funeral, people remember that in the Big Brother world. And so I'm curious if people even remember his presence in the game and not just remember, oh, he's the guy that beat Dan because of bitter jury.
Taryn, I think that this is going to be an interesting exercise to talk about Ian and what he did in Big Brother 14, because I do feel like that of the people that we're talking about, he's probably, and you know, I can't say with 100% certainty, but I would think that he's probably the person that's the most different from the person that went and played in their first season.
I agree. You know,
or at least last time they played.
Yeah, we've both talked to Ian. He was 21 when he first played. As Asia said, he's 29 now. I'm 28. I was a very different person at 21. It's like, I think a lot of people can attest to that kind of change. We've talked about, you know, there are other players on this cast, like Danny Donato, who played when she was 20, and is now, you know, 33. So that's definitely a big change, but we saw kind of like an intermediate area with her. But Ian, for sure, Ian is somebody who came onto the show as a certain kind of person, as this kind of like shy, nerdy guy. And he got off the show as a rock star. And he talks about this on the Taryn show
his daughter's birthday.
Yes. Yeah, yeah. He kind of gets lost in it a little bit after the show. But he then kind of calms down and he kind of like, I think he's a lot more comfortable in his own skin, which is part of why he didn't really need Big Brother anymore. At least that's my assumption. So now he comes back, I think just drawn in by the allure of like, it's all stars, like the inner fan in me is speaking again. And so I have to imagine that there is going to be part of him that flares back up. That is the Ian of old, but it will be tempered by the new Ian. And I'm really curious to see how he plays, because I think he does have a really good mind for the game. I think he's learned a lot socially, and where he, a lot of areas where he was pretty weak in his first game, I think he can surprise people and do really well in a second game.
Okay, so let's talk about the Big Brother 14, Ian, to at least get the origin story out there. Asia, could you talk a little bit about the version 1.0 of his game? Because I think there's a few different phases, but being drafted by Mike Boogie, being part of Team Boogie with Frank, and I believe also Gen City also rounded out that team. How did Ian do in the early phases of Big Brother 14?
Ian was trying to find his footing. Like, it was very awkward. And he was very awkward those first few weeks. And it really wasn't that he was building these alliances. He was really just trying to find his way socially. And I think when he was finally able to realize, okay, I am the quirky guy. I can hit myself in the head with my foot. And people enjoy that. They think it's entertaining. He dove into that and he decided, you know what, this is who I'm going to be. And I think that's what helped him greatly. I think if he had been on the block early on in the game, that could have really hindered him. Like, who's to say that the first couple of weeks, Mike saved Ian, and who's to say that he wouldn't have been, he wouldn't have been putting his feet to the fire and nervous and not able to kind of get to know the cast and really come into his own. I think, like Taryn said, he's 21. He's really trying to discover, like, as much as people like to say they know who they are at 21, they don't. And so you're really trying to discover yourself. And he was literally doing that in front of our eyes in the Big Brother house. And so he gained his footing and then started to win competitions, like you said. And then, you know, we know the infamous alliance called the Crack Pack that he was a part of. And so that really shaped the rest of his game.
Yeah, that's where he started to come into his own in the game. But in the early phases of the game, Taryn, that Ian easily could have gone home at any point, right?
Oh yeah, I mean he was the first target up for, you know, being sent out of the house when Boogie won the competition and saved him. That's why he saved him, because he knew that there's a good chance that Ian was going to go home if not for being saved by Boogie. So yeah, definitely not a great start.
Yeah, and there was a lot of other things that worked in his favor between the crazy antics of Willie Hance and Joe. Joe and all sorts of like big characters not mm-hmm. playing great games that became just much bigger targets in front of Ian. But let's talk about the formation of the Quack Pack and Ian's role, which sort of ends up helping him get away from the Mike Boogie era of the game once the coaches came into it. Melissa, do you have any thoughts about Ian's role in the Quack Pack?
Well, it was a terrible name, I will say, but you know, I thought that it was a great move for him. And I think that like, it was also surprising because it had seemed like he was going to work with Mike Boogie. And so I think like to form some separate alliance and kind of go against your coach was a little bit of a shock, at least for me. Like I had always thought, okay, Ian, he's this nice guy. He's like this nerdy guy. He's very like, you know, I don't know, insecure, it seems. So like, he's not really going to like make big moves. Yeah, he's a fan, but like, you know.
That's what Mike Boogie really thought too.
Yeah, and it makes sense. I could absolutely see why. But, you know, I do have to say that like Mike Boogie's eviction, I don't know, we're not at that point yet, but I got to talk about it because that is like one of my favorite moments from that season, obviously, besides Dan's funeral, besides all that. But when Ian gives that goodbye message, so like basically Mike Boogie leaves the house like furious with Ian because he realizes he's been betrayed, and Ian tries to give him a hug and Mike Boogie pushes him away. And like, basically Mike Boogie leaves and Ian is like, get to step in and everything. And Mike Boogie leaves. And then the goodbye message, it's like the perfect goodbye message because he basically explains, number one, he like flatters Mike Boogie and says like, I grew up watching you. I have nothing but the like respect for your game. You're amazing. But, and then basically goes on to describe how Ian was the reason for his demise and that he had formed this separate alliance and that like, basically I'm the reason you're sitting in that chair right now. And also then he apologizes, like, I'm sorry. So it's like the perfect, like if you could craft a goodbye message, like that is the way to do it because it makes you look good. It makes them feel good. And it shows, you know, like the behind the scenes look at what alliances were being missed by that person, that it's really hard in the end in your final speeches to get all that out there. So I was so impressed. And Mike Boogie ends up clapping for him. Like he leaves angry and then ends up like, good work. It was chef's kiss.
Yes. Chef Joe's kiss.
Chef Joe's kiss.
Taryn, so the Quack Pack, correct me if I'm wrong. Now, Ian wasn't even really like the Quack Pack was really a smaller alliance. And then they just told Ian that he was part of it. And then they let him name that group, right? That they didn't even consider him to be a real member of that alliance.
There was a core four of Dan, Brittany, Shane, and Danielle, and they made an alliance with Boogie and Frank called the Silent Six. But they didn't trust Boogie and Frank all the way, Dan in particular had been working on Ian, Brittany had been working on Ian, and they felt like they could flip Ian away from Frank and Boogie and use him to get information for them. And so they kind of dragged him up. I believe he was in the dog costume at the time. And they basically, let him name a five-person alliance, thinking like that he's creating this thing, which is why like he says that he did all these things to Boogie when really it was orchestrated by other people, which is part of his whole arc over the course of the season. But it was very much designed just to like pull him in as a number and use him as a mole to get information, which he ultimately does give them and lets them know that, you know, Frank and Boogie are conspiring against you, Dan. And then we're going to see that they end up betraying the Silent Six. And the Quack Pack often gets lauded as, you know, an alliance that was pretty dominant and did pretty well. But really only by default, because many people in the alliance wanted to turn at various points, but it just never could happen because of how the competitions played out.
Okay. So, Asia, can you talk about Ian's role as going from somebody who gets brought into the Quack Pack to ultimately, you know, finding his own path in the game?
Yeah, I think people, they may often forget this about this season, but the fact that that rivalry between Frank and Ian kind of sparked after Mike Boogie's eviction. That's something that really allowed Ian to stand on his two feet. Like, he was very bold to call out Frank and to go into his face and just to say, like, this is how I feel. I did what I had to do. And people usually don't think that that archetype would do something like that. But I think that allowed people to see, wow, like, Ian's a very confident guy. He can stand on his own. He's really growing in this house. And I think that allowed him to start putting the target on Frank. And then he was eventually able to put to get Frank out during his HOH. And so I think that that kind of helped him come into his own. And then really trusting Dan. Of course, we know Dan was orchestrating a lot of it, but that's how he ended up, you know, going all the way to the end, because he put so much trust in Dan, and Dan knew that he had Ian wrapped around his finger. You know, even though you wouldn't want to be in that position, it ended up benefiting Ian.
Taryn, can you talk about the shifting relationship between Dan and Ian and sort of like the second half of the game? Because it goes back and forth with Ian really trusting Dan, and then also Dan trying to target Ian, unbeknownst to Ian many times. I remember the yes. double eviction episode where Ian ends up winning the power of veto in the table maze competition, and had he not won the power veto, that he was definitely going to go home that night.
Yeah, the Dan-Ian relationship is interesting because Dan really cultivated the relationship. He talked to him about Pokemon for hours and hours, and really developed this kind of mentor, you know, kind of like a buddy relationship with him, and was using him in the game as a weapon slash shield against Frank and Boogie, and was needed him to get Frank out because Frank was going on this unbelievable comp run, finally manages to get Frank out. And he goes, okay, now it's time to get rid of this kid. Got to get rid of him. And then Ian goes on an unbelievable comp run. And that is the story of Ian's game, is that Dan is now like ready to slit Ian's throat, ready to stab him in the back. And Ian just keeps winning over and over and over until it's the final four. Basically, Ian is immune for 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks in a row as Dan is trying to get him out, and all the while completely unaware of the fact that Dan has already dropped him. As soon as he loses a competition, he's gone. He doesn't even know that he needs to win these competitions. He just is. And that is the story of Ian's game, really. An unbelievably good competition threat, which I think is the main thing that goes underrated in Ian's game.
Yeah.
I had forgotten about that, actually. Like, I totally didn't even think of Ian as like a comp threat at all. That wasn't even like in my mind. I just figured like, okay, he's really good at strategy, et cetera, et cetera. But when I was looking into it today to be like, okay, let me remember everything he's done and let me think about Ian, I realized that he totally is a comp threat. And I think that's something that, like you said, will be totally unnoticed when he is in this new season. I mean, the other like competitors probably won't remember that. They'll probably think of him, I mean, as the like nerdy guy in a dog suit. And they're really not going to remember the fact that he's actually a really big physical threat.
Yeah. Asia, we saw in Big Brother 14 that, that Ian was able to win so many competitions, but something that we've talked about a lot on the podcast is just how different the competitions have become over these last couple of years. Do you feel like that Ian could be at a disadvantage? We know that he's able to hold on and be on in these endurance competitions, but in terms of some of these more physical challenges that we see, you know, players like Jackson, also known as Mickey, you know, Tyler, Casey, players that are just sort of like bigger in stature, that do you think that Ian could be at a disadvantage in sort of like these late game competitions this time?
I do, because that's something that he had going for him was the type of competitions he was winning. And I know these past few seasons, we've just been waiting for the wall or waiting for a mental competition that would give other players an advantage. But I think that now they're really getting into things that just can wow you on TV. And, you know, that's not standing in a booth. That's not memorizing something. And so I think that's where Ian thrives. He can hang on to whatever, like you said, and he can be on a wall. But I think that something that he's going to have to lean into is his social game. And I think that now he's mature. I don't think he's a teacher anymore. I think he's a consultant now. And so I think that he's really going to have to try to form these relationships. And it is good that the cast is like leaning older. You're not in there with a bunch of 22, 23 year olds. I think he needs to lean on that. And I mean, like you said, people forgot about that. So it's not even something that people are going to fear and think, oh, we need to get Ian out before he goes on this comp, like winning spree. I think that if they just see him as this guy that I can get along with, someone that I can trust, someone that's smart, that could benefit me, he'll be in a good position and not have to go on a comp spree.
Taryn, the big wild card, I think, in all of this, when we're talking about the competitions and trying to handicap who's going to be good at what, because that the challenges have become very predictable. And I think that's something that Ian is very keenly aware of as well over these Big Brother seasons. In this COVID era of Big Brother, we kind of have no idea if the challenges might end up being more mental competitions as we go along, because I'm not sure necessarily how big of a challenge build are they going to be able to do for any given competition based on the current limitations.
Yeah, and honestly, that could be one of the biggest factors determining the outcome of this entire season is whether or not they are capable of following through with this trend of more physical competitions. I do think that would be a major hindrance to Ian's game if they remain as physical as they have been lately. He would have to play a very different game, and I do think he's capable of it, but so much of his win equity is tied up in how good he is in those competitions. It's a really big part of his game, and if he's not able to win them because they've changed, then that will be a significant disadvantage. However, if they are not the same as they have been lately because they can't orchestrate these big builds, then I think you might even see people come in expecting physical competitions, because I'm sure some of them are aware of this trend, and if at least one of them is, then they're going to tell the other people, and so they might be expecting physical competitions,
but expect
and then
the unexpected. Yeah,
exactly. And so that could actually benefit Ian doubly so, because I do think some people will be a little bit worried about Ian mentally if they know mental competitions
but
are coming up.
Melissa, every advantage is a disadvantage, because if it is in fact more mental competitions over the course of the season than physical competitions, then people are going to say we have to target Ian because he's so good at mental competitions.
Yeah, that is true. It's, you know, pros and cons. I will say that with Ian coming back, I'm really excited to see him back. Number one, because, you know, obviously we haven't seen him in a while. I love the idea of like old past players coming on, et cetera, et cetera. But I also feel like Ian is not afraid to make big moves. Like he knows what people want to see. He knows the show. Like, and he's not afraid to just like go for it. And I feel like a lot of the more recent players have been a little bit timid when it comes to that sort of thing. And so I'm very excited, because I do feel like he'll make for fun TV and he'll make for a good season, an exciting season. So I'm really excited to see him back.
Asia, I just want to talk about the last part of Big Brother 14 in terms of Ian's end game. Was he planning on going with Dan all the way down to the end from a few weeks out?
Yeah, he definitely was. I mean, because if you look at even the final, what, five, was it Gen City that was out fifth? Or and then you had, you know, Dan blindside Shane. And then even with Dan, Danielle, and Ian, you would think, okay, he's going to evict Dan. Like, Dan has had an amazing season, but he still took Dan. That was his plan. You could even see it in the finale, how shocked he was to find out that Dan said that he would have taken Danielle. Like, I was like, you're still being played after the votes, after the vote's about to be cast, everyone's out of the house. This man is still playing you. So I think that I think also that the fact that he took Dan showed how bold he is, to my earlier point, because, you know, a modern day player might see, you know, okay, even if they were not having that undying loyalty to the person, they would see, okay, I need to get this man out because he's going to win. But Ian wasn't even nervous about that. He was just like, no, Dan betrayed everybody in the jury and I'm good.
Yeah. Taryn, if Dan took Danielle, I'm sorry, if Ian took Danielle to the final three, would Danielle have won or Ian have won either way?
Honestly, he might have lost to Danielle. And I know that that sounds surprising because we know the outcome. But Ian, one of the reasons why, you know, Ian was somebody that Dan was willing to bring to the end after he couldn't get him out was because he had really soured a lot of jury votes. Frank hated him. Joe hated him. You know, he had a kind of a thing with Ashley. So that was kind of okay. Brittany, okay. Jen City did not like Ian at all. Shane hated Ian. Danielle hated Ian. He cultivated all of those things. I mean, he did to Ian exactly what he did to Memphis. He got a lot of the jury to hate him. And Ian did some of it himself as well. And so if Ian had been up there against Danielle, who people actually did have a decent amount of respect for in the game, she had won a lot of competitions as well, had made a lot of big moves and had cultivated a decent amount of relationships, there's a good chance that he might have lost to her.
Okay.
You know, I have a question. So what was, because who knows what it is now, but what was Ian's relationship with Janelle by the end of the season?
I mean, during the time that she went out, he didn't.
Yeah, because like if they're going to play together, possibly.
Right. I do think that Ian and Janelle will have a good connection. I think that, I think they can go in. They were from the same season. They have that connection. They're also kind of like a little bit old school compared to a lot of these new players. They both have like a love and respect for the game. I'm sure he's like a big fan still of her, and I'm sure she appreciates that. And so I think they're going to work together. I do.
Okay. I was thinking that too. I didn't remember how like their relationship panned out by the end. Yeah. So I wasn't sure if it was like sour or anything.
Asia, can you recall any moments between Ian and Janelle from Big Brother 14?
See, it's tough because Janelle went out so early that it was hard because Ian didn't become, you know, who he was until later on in the game. And so, you know, it's really hard to remember, especially I wasn't watching feeds at the time. It's hard to remember from the episodes if they really had a connection. But I do think that anybody going in that's from the same season, no matter what happened on their season, I would think it should be an unspoken bond. Mm-hmm. Like, okay, I'm going to have your back at least at the beginning until we start forming relationships. So I think they at least have that going for them, the old school and the fact that they were on the same season.
And that's basically what it was like in the first All-Stars, was like basically the seasons were kind of teaming up. And that's why it was like, oh, everyone needs to like season six is a problem. And so I think that like that's probably going to be what it's like now. It's like people who are individuals from their own season, like will probably have a harder time than people who are coming in with pals from their previous season, unless the people who are individuals decide to like team up. But yeah.
Taryn, you mentioned Memphis earlier, and then it got me thinking, and I hadn't thought about this before, that hypothetically speaking, if Memphis is in the house, that do you think, are those two guys bonded because, hey, we both went to the end with Dan? Or is Memphis potentially anti-Ian, justice for Dan? Do you think that they function together?
Renegades 3.0.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be.
Oh, my God.
I think it would be amazing if Ian and Memphis came together and they, like, renegated it up. I don't think it'll happen, though. I think that Ian is skeptical of anything that has touched Dan. And I think that Memphis is probably aware that Ian will be skeptical of anything that has touched Dan. I think these two might actually target each other.
Asia, how do you see it?
I definitely agree. I agree. Like, I think no matter how much Ian may want that to happen, because that would be pretty cool to have a Renegades 3.0. But I think that just thinking of Memphis, I mean, Big Brother 10 was a long time ago, but think of Memphis and his just the type of person he is. I see him going in and wanting to just pair up and bro down with Tyler and the other guys that are in there and not really see Ian as a person that he can get along with. That's what him and Dan had going for them, because they would be friends outside of the house.
I think Memphis is a pretty easygoing guy. I've met him a couple of times and he seems like a really like easy guy to get along with. And we talked about how like Ian hangs out with Big Brother 17 Jeff. Like, I feel like that Ian isn't against hanging out with, you know, a like a bro-y type of guy. So I think Ian can get along with anybody.
But the question is, would Memphis have made it to the final two without Dan? And would have Ian had made it to the final two? I know Dan was targeting him, but a lot that Ian was involved in was because of Dan. And so them two together, it's just like, you know, Cody pairing up with someone. Like, could you see Cody pairing up with Ian? I just don't. It's hard to visualize because of the type of player Ian was in season 14.
I could absolutely see Memphis and Cody pairing up and being like, oh, we are loyal, like we're, you know, bros, like this works. I absolutely see that one. But Ian and Memphis, I don't know.
I do think that if they do work together, the connection might actually be through Janelle, because Dan and Janelle, I think, are still on pretty good terms. Janelle has a lot of respect for Dan in the game that he played. I think that if Dan had any involvement in the pre-gaming, which I assume that he did, he probably hooked Memphis up with Janelle if they didn't already have some kind of relationship. And so if Ian is working with Janelle and so is Memphis, they might connect that way. But I think, I think again, there might be some tension there.
Okay. Do we see any other hypothetical connections for Ian with people that are rumored to be part of this cast?
I could see Nicole being Nicole Franzel. Yes. I could see them having a good friendship. If Nicole is on this season, I can just see that bond. I mean, she was a part of that archetype where after Ian won, it was like, okay, be afraid of the nerd. And so then Steve came on and it was like, oh, we should be afraid of Steve. But then he went on to win, and then Nicole. So people are afraid of the person with glasses. So that might just automatically connect them of, okay, in history, we're that person people are afraid of.
Asia, that's a really great point, because I feel like that Big Brother 16 started as like, oh, this is the girl Ian. She has glasses.
She was also his like QT thing.
Oh yeah.
Was she? I'm trying to remember, was it Nicole? I feel like it was he used to have one every season.
That season it had to be Nicole.
I have to go back.
He had a thing for Big Meech. He had a thing for Big Meech.
Big Meech was
when
Big Brother 17. Yeah.
Yeah. I thought it was Nicole too.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure
it may well be. It may well be.
What was it? What did he call her? QT?
QT 3.14.
Yeah. PewDiePie.
Yeah. So, we'll see that they're both spoken for now. So, maybe in another lifetime.
So it's safe territory now, because they don't even have to worry about, you know, we're not accidentally flirting with each other. We're both taken.
They could laugh about it. You know, I know Ian was in consideration for that all-star Amazing Race that they did last year. And I know he got pretty close to the altar and then ended up getting left behind. But there's a couple of these personalities that were involved with that lead up to that, including Janelle, including Nicole. I wonder if there's any sort of conversations that were started in that era that could end up being a part of this season.
Well, haven't you heard the new rumors out there that Nicole actually is the reason why all of the Big Brother players that didn't make the cut make the cut?
Yeah. Okay. Well, that if that's the case, then I think that Ian is not going to be happy about that.
I don't think Ian believes that, though. I would say.
Yeah, I don't believe so either. Do you see players that could be targeting Ian based on this hypothetical list?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, I think Memphis could be. I think that he's probably going to worry like the Memphises, the Codys. I could see Tyler, if Tyler is working with Ian, he'll be okay. But if Tyler doesn't feel like a solid connection to Ian, I think he'll want him gone. I think he has to worry about some of these other guys.
Okay.
You know what I would love to see? I would love to see Bailey or Davon pair up with Ian, just because thinking back on season 17, Steve wanted to pair up with Davon, and it just didn't work. Yeah.
Didn't he call her mom?
He said, I love you. Love you.
Right.
Yeah.
It would just be so cool to see two different, just completely opposite personality types to team up, because then they wouldn't expect that that person is working with Ian. Mm-hmm. And I think, especially with Bailey and Davon, I think that, you know, Ian can provide a different perspective from a strategic standpoint that would really help them. And then they could really help him socially. So I'd be interested to see that.
Yeah. I could see Enzo really not digging Ian.
Mm-hmm. I feel either like that or he takes him under his wing.
What was wing for what? What does Ian need Enzo for?
No, I just think that like Enzo could see it as like, like this guy is like my like, I don't know.
This is my kind of guy.
I mean,
Enzo, hang out with.
Enzo saw Matt Hoffman and was like, this guy's smart. I need this guy.
Right, so like, maybe. Yeah, exactly. Being like, here's the brains. Like, I'm the meow meow and he's the brains.
Yeah.
Like, I could see that.
Here's Enzo's Brigade 2.0. It's Ian Terry. It's Cody Calafiore. And it's either...
Who's the lane?
I think he goes Tyler. Memphis. No, sorry. It's Ian, Memphis, and Tyler. That's it.
Ian Memphis.
Yeah.
Ian is the Matt Hoffman. Memphis is the Lane. Tyler is the Hayden.
And Cody doesn't make the cut?
Sorry, Cody. You're the Brendan.
I don't know.
Doesn't work.
I think he'll keep getting in there.
Yeah.
Maybe they can make it a bomb squad. Get Cody in there.
Oh, boy.
Asia, we haven't talked about Nicole Anthony, hypothetically, and I feel like that she would be a very natural ally for Ian.
I think so, too, but... When I think about the two Nicoles, I would hope that they would pair up, but I think that's just too, that's too predictable. Mm-hmm. I think that Nicole Anthony would try to team up with more of the minority of the house. So when you come in, you have the cool kids. And then I think Nicole Anthony is really going to try to cling on to the people that aren't in the majority. And I cannot see Nicole Franzl doing that. Mm-hmm. Of course, she's going to try to find someone. She can't have the same strategy she's had in the past seasons because mm-hmm. of Victor. Mm-hmm. So I'm really interested to see how she would play that. But Nicole Anthony, yes, I think that Ian would either team up with or have a good friendship, like one of those bonds where they spend all night, you know, playing games, talking with either of the Nicoles. I do really like Nicole. I mean, I like both Nicoles, but I do really like Nicole Anthony because, it could be recency bias, but I think that she really had her like she had a good pulse of what was going on. And I think that could really help Ian because Ian's lack of social media presence over the years really worries me about his involvement with Big Brother. And so I don't know how in tune he is with current day Big Brother and how things work and, you know, what plays to different people's advantages as he did back in the day.
Yeah,
that's actually a good point.
An interesting thing that has been, you know, rumored. There are rumblings that Ian was pre-gaming pretty hard. I can't confirm that, but we've heard that.
Any talk of with who?
No, that's why, like, I don't know who it was with, but we've heard that there was some pre-gaming happening. I assume it's with Janelle because she's also been pre-gaming pretty hard. If he was doing some pre-gaming, then I do think that he is probably going to be able to go in with some connections versus a Nicole Anthony, who I believe has not been doing any pre-gaming. Seems much more like a rule follower to me. her name wasn't out there from any alumni talking. So it seems like she was pretty quiet, and that could prevent them from connecting early mm-hmm. on, even though their personalities might be, you know, primed for it.
I could also see a situation where Nicole Anthony is like, I don't want a repeat of last season where I'm like constantly in the minority. Like, I'm going to like team up with the big guys. I'm going to like, you know, get right up in there in the majority alliance. Like, I don't know if that'll work out for her, but like, I could see a situation where she's like, okay, I'm going to like do like it totally differently than I did before.
Yeah.
Yeah. And she was a Big Brother super fan, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I fear going in, she's going to be a small duck in a huge pond because, you know, you have all of these amazing players who people have been talking about for years. And then Ian, he's the only winner in this bunch, mm-hmm. right?
Well, so Nicole Franzl, perhaps.
Oh, Nicole Franzl. Okay. Okay. Yeah. That's a good point.
Is it? Yeah, wow. That's interesting. Cause originally there was Josh and Casey and stuff. So there was a lot of different winner.
For all we know, there's still Josh and Casey.
Yeah. I mean, right. Who knows now, but I guess out of the rumor, the new,
we haven't done a podcast yet about them.
Ooh, then it's not happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Then they won't be on.
Okay. Mm. All right. So, anybody else that we haven't touched on, just in terms of their relationship with Ian? I feel like that Kevin is an interesting one, Taryn.
Yeah, I think Ian, you know, Kevin probably goes in without too many connections. Ian is probably one of the few people that knows who Kevin is, mm-hmm. And I think can probably bond with him in that way. So I think that Kevin could be a good ally for Ian if he decides to try and pick him up. But again, that was never really Ian's game. He wasn't really a shot caller. He wasn't somebody that picked up allies. He was somebody that was brought into things. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I'm hoping that we see a different Ian because I think that he can play this game well. Mm-hmm. But, you know, we're talking about him assuming he has changed his game. He might not have.
Well, you know, what's interesting is he had that pre-written strategy last time.
Yeah.
So,
but he kind of said that was bogus.
Strategy is this time.
That he had the whiteboard plan. But he's such a great strategic thinker that I really feel like that, mm-hmm. if anybody sort of is going to be able to sort of like look at like big picture of, mm-hmm. where Big Brother is right now and formulate like an exact strategy for this season. Like I had an interesting conversation with him off podcast like a year ago about what he really was very confident that he had completely figured out a Big Brother and how to make it all work. And so but he also did not seem like that he had like a real desire to go back, but he was just like had like a thought about strategy that he wanted to share with somebody, but he didn't want to come on a podcast. And he said maybe one day he would want to talk about this on a podcast, but I'll have to wait till after the season.
Well, good I'm wondering, thing he didn't, right?
Yeah.
I know, then he would have revealed everything. I'm wondering if he's going to be like a Kevin Martin, like with that sort of level of preparedness.
That's actually similar to like what he was talking about, how Kevin Martin was able to
game the system.
And what his point was is like, why isn't Kevin Martin considered to be the greatest player of all time? Because Kevin Martin figured out exactly what the win conditions were and did exactly what they were. It doesn't matter that, if he wasn't doing well in other parts of the game, he figured out exactly, okay, I can't lose if I do X, Y, Z. And figured out how to do exactly that, and then went on to win the game.
Why I'm wondering if Ian will have that exact same like totally mapped out strategy. Mm-hmm.
I just hope that he isn't too reliant on something like that, because I think to answer his question that he didn't ask me, the reason Kevin Martin isn't considered to be one of the best winners of all time is because it's not a very flexible game plan. If the competitions changed that season, where does Kevin end up? And as we've talked about, we don't even know. The competitions could go in any kind of direction this season. The format, the cast itself, everything is in flux. And so if he thinks that he can go in with a set game plan to parse out the win conditions and like min-max his opportunities for a specific layout, he might find that, he needs the flexibility to be able to adapt to different scenarios. And that's where he might falter.
Yeah. Just like we're in unprecedented times, this is going to be an unprecedented season of Big Brother. I mean, we saw that with Big Brother Canada being canceled in the middle of the season. Like, I think there's going to be so much that we see this season that we've never seen before. And so I think that the person that makes it to the end is going to be the one that was the most flexible and was able to move and flow with everything. But to answer your question about people we haven't talked about, Christmas and Keisha. So they're both, well, Christmas is what, 38 and Keisha's 41. And I could see Ian clinging to that type of person, not like a motherly figure, but like an aunt, you know, like someone that is, if someone's older that they could take Ian under their wing as just like, oh, Ian's so adorable. And we have good conversations. He's so easy to talk to. So I don't think we should underestimate the relationships they could form.
Also, Keisha knowing Dan or being on Dan season. So sure. They have that connection too.
Yeah.
Yeah. We both got played.
Yeah.
let's commiserate. I do think that is something that will benefit Ian is that, you know, Ian probably more than anybody on this cast, except for maybe Christmas, like it really understands what it's like to be in the belly of the beast, completely snowed by somebody all season long and to then have them, you know, take off their mask at the end and have that shocked reaction of like, oh my God, the entire season needs to be recontextualized. And he is able to accept it too. Like he recognizes I got played. And I think that being able to accept it and look back and look at the signs and look at how he felt in those moments, I think it's going to be a lot harder to snow Ian in the way that he was snowed before. Whereas a lot of these people, you know, I think still feel like I can't be manipulated. And those are the easiest people to manipulate.
Yeah. I'm so excited to get the chance to hypothetically watch Ian come back to Big Brother that I had the pleasure of getting to podcast with him every week after the episode. He used to come on for eviction night all through BB 15, 16, 17 even. And then I think he would have made some sporadic appearances even in BB 18. And the guy has such a great strategic mind and so many keen observations. And that's with him thinking about Big Brother, what, an hour a week, 2 hours a week? What is he capable of thinking about the game 24/7?
On the hammock.
On the hammock. Yeah. Get out the WD-40.
Yes.
The squeaky hammock is back.
I will never forget. I will never forget Big Brother 15. On your podcast, Rob,
yes.
Ian was the first person that I heard or saw. Like, I was out of my mind, like, watching Andy. He's killing this game, and everybody hates him. Everybody thinks he's terrible. And finally, Ian was the person that I remember first saying on your podcast, no, if he wins this game, he's a top four winner. And I was like, yes! thank you, Ian. He sees through things. I think he sees the game in the form that in a way that he can understand really well. And so I agree with you. I think that he can come on this season and sit in that hammock and go back and forth and drive us crazy on the live feeds and think through a bunch of different scenarios. And I think that can be good for him as long as he has the other skills to, you know, make those plans go into action.
Exactly. I'm so excited to watch Ian play. I was a resident assistant. I went to the UT Austin, University of Texas at Austin, for those that aren't in Texas, of course, because I found out people think UT is Tennessee. But anyway, I was a resident assistant and I put on a program. I literally went back and I was like, I'm pretty sure this was on when I was in college his season. I put on a program for the finale and it says like, who's going to win Big Brother, Dan, Ian, or Danielle? And I remember watching it with a bunch of residents and I was excited that Ian won. Even though I loved Dan and I loved him in his season, I was excited that it was that underdog story that really like did it for me. And so I specifically remember that 8 years ago. So to watch him play now and to see how he's transformed and see how it's going to work for him and see how far it's going to take him, I'm really pumped.
Well, listen, I don't think we got this at the top of the show. What was your history with Ian?
Nine?
Yeah. Did you have any as a fan watching him play the show? What made you want to come on for this podcast?
I wanted to come on for this podcast because initially when I watched the show, I was not super impressed with Ian because I loved Dan and I wanted Dan to win, and so I was very not happy. But then when I went back and rewatched all the shows, I had like a different, I mean, not that I thought that Dan should lose, but I had a different sort of respect for Ian. And I thought it was really interesting to see like the transformation, especially because I wasn't watching live feeds at the time during Big Brother 14. So when you watch it week to week, you don't really notice the change as drastically as when you're like binge watching like right in a row, like the entire season. So it was really cool to be able to see that sort of shift. And I think then I went back and watched that part of that season, or yeah, part of that season again, when we were doing a podcast about like ranking the winners. And so then I got to see, like, you know, especially in the current context with like goodbye messages and stuff, like the way he handled like people leaving and the goodbye messages and that sort of thing. Like, I was really impressed with that. And so I just like, I'm really excited to see him play now, knowing that his story can't be the same.
Yeah.
So I'm just really excited to see like the new Ian, essentially. I mean, who knows if it'll be new. Maybe it'll be like the same exact thing all over again. But
perhaps,
I'm
but
thinking it's going to be. Yeah, exactly. Like, I'm thinking it's going to be the new Ian, and it'll be interesting because it's I do feel like some of these players that we've either seen multiple times already or players that we've seen recently won't have that sort of change. Like, we won't see a different game. Yeah. Like, it might be more similar. And so I just felt like I was really excited about Ian, and that's why I wanted to talk about him.
And Taryn, I want to just come back to this as the last thing. We talked about your interview with Ian, where he opened up about a lot of things that he experienced and how he was feeling after the season. I'm just curious if you have a feeling in your conversation with him. What do you think he is looking for to come back? Because we saw in Survivor Winners at War, winners coming back, it isn't necessarily about getting the win the second time around. That didn't seem like that was the exact win condition for every single person that came back on Winners at War. We saw certain people like, oh, I want to get this out of the season. I want to get the credit this time. I want to make relationships this time. Do you feel like that Ian might be looking for something else? Or is he looking for that elusive second win, which Dan was not able to get? And would that second win actually even legitimize the BB14 mm-hmm. win to put him as the only person to be able to win twice?
I do think that I think that he's coming back in for redemption. I think that's a little bit simplified, though. I think that when he came off of his first season, he talked about like he let it go to his head a little bit. But I think not in a way that like, you know, he really genuinely felt like he was amazing and couldn't be touched. I think it was kind of maybe a defense mechanism because he was, you know, he's a shy guy, and he goes on to the season and he kind of comes into his own a little bit, but he's also criticized for not really doing well. And so he kind of overcompensates by letting it go to his head. He kind of learns to get over that. He comes back to himself. But I think there's still that piece of him there that is like I didn't do what I wanted to do. And I'm so much better now. Like, I'm so much more mature. I've changed into a different person. I think he wants to show us this new Ian. We've seen it because we've talked to him. I think he wants the rest of the fan base to see it. And I think that's maybe part of why he's shied away from the fan base, because he's so completely different from how they all see him. And that's a hard place to be. And so I think he wants to come on and just prove, like, I'm a different person now. And I can do this game well. And if he gets the second win, he gets the second win. And I think he'll definitely love that, and I think he'll shove it in Dan's face all day long. But yeah. But I think the main goal here is to just be like, this is, I have changed.
And I think that that's an interesting point that you bring up about him being a different person and wanting to show us that he's a different person, because production may not necessarily be having that same vision about Ian. It's like, oh, great, let's bring back Ian, and then let's put him in the dog costume because that he's our nerdy super fan. And I could definitely see Ian having some production friction with production and bristling about, like, nah, I don't want to do that. You know, I'm not going to necessarily give you that line that you're hoping to hear from me. I'm not the same person that you thought I was.
I'm not the kid that kicks himself in the face so other people can laugh anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. And I wonder if that could affect his edit. So
I think it could.
We'll see.
Yeah. Oh, boy. Villain edit for Ian.
We saw it.
Bad boy.
We basically saw it happen to Steve. Steve sort of misled the casting people in his casting process, came onto the show, didn't give them what they were hoping for, and they just invisibled him. They purpled him in the edit pretty much for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, I really hope that does not happen to Ian. This is, like you said, this is him defending his title, and this is defending his win to show that he is a He's someone that should be looked at as a great Big Brother player. You shouldn't look at him as just someone who beat Dan, just happened to beat Dan. And I think that he has something to prove because he hasn't been such in the forefront.
Yeah.
Andy's getting a lot of flack right now on Twitter because people think that he's constantly trying to prove his win, and people haven't seen that from Ian. And so I think Ian, he's going to have to let his game show that for him. And so I really hope that he can do that.
Yeah. We'll see. I could see him being somebody like a Sophie who came back in Winners at War, where people felt like, oh, okay, well, Sophie, she was 21 and she only won because she was sitting next to Coach and everybody hated Coach, and then came back and played one of the most impressive games in Winners at War because they had a self-confidence and she was ready to go. And if it wasn't for Tony just being such a buzzsaw and knowing about her idol, maybe she ends up being the winner of that season. But she did a really great job coming back. Okay. All right. Does anybody else have anything they want to add about Ian? Okay. Asia, this was so much fun to get the podcast with you about Ian Terry today.
It was. It was very fun. I've always wanted to, be on RHAP. I actually went to a live Know It Alls in Austin. Yeah. I took a quick day trip from Houston to Austin to go see. So that was really fun. So this is like a dream come true to be on. And so it was really nice getting to talk to you guys, especially about Ian, because I'm so excited to see him play.
Okay. Asia, where can people see more of what you're doing?
Yeah, so people can definitely see me on Instagram. So it's Asia Like the Continent. Asia spelled A-Y-S-H-A. So Asia Like the Continent. And then I'm also on Twitter as Asia Like Asia. So it's A-Y-S-H-A, like the spelling of the continent, A-S-I-A.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. We got it. All right. Of course, Melissa Denny is a 30 Rock super fan. She got rave reviews appearing on Robin and Kevin Need a Podcast this week, talking about season 3, episode 7 of 30 Rock. She also did the rap from the movie Teen Witch. So we didn't think that she could top that, but now here she is talking about Ian Terry. So all great stuff. Melissa, what else is going on?
Nothing.
What have you been watching this summer?
What have I been watching this summer? You know what I have been doing, which is kind of interesting? I've been doing a watch of all the Academy Award nominated best pictures. So not one, but all the nominations from the beginning.
When you say from the beginning, from what, like 1930?
From 1927/28. I believe is when it first started. So I've been doing all of them and I'm 46% of the way done. It's a lot of movies.
God.
It's like 200 something movies. It's actually 547.
But you're
movies.
On your phone or something else when they're on, right?
No, I mean, I'll do other things, but like I have them on. Sometimes I'll have the script like along with it, but most of the time I can tell you, I have a whole chart too of like, oh, like what I think of each of the movies.
What's the best one so far?
See, the ones I've already seen, like I have to say that those ones are great. But these are the ones that I hadn't already seen. There are some surprises in there that I didn't think I would like. I mean, I really liked It Happened One Night. And that was such a cute rom-com. And, a surprise one was, what is it called? I'm like blanking now. It's... some old Western one. I'll tweet it or something, but it's like an old Western one that I hate Westerns and it was actually really good. It's actually pretty cool to see. Yeah. It's actually really cool to see the transition from like black and white. And like some of them are in with no sound. And then you like, it transitions and you get to see like different storylines start to pop up more, or like women be featured more, or like people of color featured more. It's like, it's very cool.
Okay.
How are you able to find them all?
Yes. Turner Classic Movies. It's amazing. Every day they add new ones and then they take some off. So you kind of have to like watch them really fast, but it's a very fun process.
Well, so are you in film school?
No, I am not. This all is right. Just me doing it on my own. I'm a total weirdo.
Okay. All right. Well, when I went to podcast college, that we had to do that, we had to listen to all the podcasts nominated for the every podcast award going all the way back to 2009. So it was a lot.
Wow. That's so impressive.
Well, look, that you think that podcasting degrees are easy to come by, Melissa?
I guess not.
Yeah. Okay. All right. That $400,000 in tuition. Okay. All right.
So impressive.
Yes.
So impressive.
Thank you. All right, Taryn. Of course, you're so hard at work getting ready for the Big Brother Marathon. Where can people see everything that you have going on?
You can find me on Twitter at @ArmstrongTaryn or Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. I've also watched a lot of movies.
As many as Melissa?
Just, that's it. Yeah, just I've a lot of them.
Yes. Do you have a chart?
Oh, you bet.
Okay. We're still trying to figure out
database.
When and how to do a Big Brother draft for this season. We've been kicking around some ideas internally. We really don't know if there's going to be a cast release at any point in this process. We think that maybe the next window in which they might release a cast could be on Monday, but is also every possibility that we could go Royal Rumble style for you, Melissa, where we just end up with like, all right, let's see who's coming out next. And then oh my God, that's Josh Martinez. That's Josh Martinez music.
Oh God, no. Not yeah. that song again.
So we'll see. We don't know. Your guess is as good as ours. So
hopefully he got rid of that on the challenge.
we'll keep you posted. All right.
By the way, I figured out the name of the movie. It's called The Oxbow Incident. So
The Oxbow Incident?
Yes, it is. It's good.
All right. Well, thank you for that. And looking forward to watching Ian Terry. Thanks so much. All right, everybody, there you have it. Ian Terry, potentially, hypothetically speaking, returning to Big Brother. In just a moment, Taryn and I are going to talk Bailey Dayton, hypothetically speaking, with Kirsten McInnes and Sosa E. Holler coming up. But let me first thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. Those are our friends over at HelloFresh. HelloFresh offers so many recipes to choose from each week to help you break out of your recipe rut. Get fresh, pre-measured ingredients and mouth-watering seasonal recipes delivered right to your door with HelloFresh, America's number one meal kit. HelloFresh lets you skip those trips to the grocery store and makes home cooking fun, easy, and affordable. HelloFresh is like being in the Big Brother house and being able to go to the pantry and then, oh, what are we making? This is what they got for us. HelloFresh is going to deliver those meals right to you. There's something for everyone, including low-calorie, vegetarian, and family-friendly recipes every week. HelloFresh offers fresh, high-quality ingredients every week for a super flavorful experience that even Chef Joe would approve of. Over 90% of the ingredients are sourced directly from growers to ensure the freshest recipes are delivered to your door. HelloFresh is great because it cuts out the stressful meal planning and grocery store trips. You can enjoy cooking and get dinner on the table in about 30 minutes or even 20 minutes with some of their quick recipe options. Perfect when you're listening to a podcast. HelloFresh has pre-portioned ingredients, which means there's less prep for you and less food waste. The packaging HelloFresh uses to ship your food is almost entirely made from recyclable and or already recycled content. You can keep your fridge stocked by adding extra proteins or sides like garlic bread to your weekly order. Easily change your delivery days or food preferences or skip a week whenever you need to. Feeding the whole family has never been easier with larger box sizes for more servings and more savings. And HelloFresh is committed to making fresh, delicious food available now more than ever and has taken extra steps to keep their employees and customers safe. HelloFresh has donated 2.5 million meals to charity, and this year is stepping up their food donations amid the coronavirus crisis. HelloFresh is America's number one meal kit, and I'll tell you why. Here's what I like about HelloFresh, that they send you everything in its own bag. So I've tried other meal kits before, and everything comes loose. What I like is that they pack up everything so you know what meal it's supposed to be for. So I know these are the potatoes for my balsamic fig chicken, which is delicious. And then these are the string beans for my creamy dill chicken. HelloFresh keeps it easy and organized because sometimes these things can get complicated, not with HelloFresh. So go to HelloFresh.com/RHAP80. Use code RHAP80 for a total of $80. Oh, that can't be right. That's way too much money. $80 off. It includes free shipping on your first box. Additional restrictions apply. Visit HelloFresh.com for more details. Again, that's HelloFresh.com/RHAP80. Promo code RHAP80. All right, everybody. I'm very excited to talk about another one of our Big Brother returning house guests. And this woman is going to hypothetically be back for her second season with me to talk about Bailey, of course, Taryn Armstrong. Taryn, how are you?
Doing great, Rob. Very excited again. Very, very excited to be talking with so many great people.
Yes, talking some BB20 today as we go back and take a look at Bailey's ride in Big Brother 20. And here with us to discuss Bailey is the great Kirsten McInnes. Kirsten, how are you?
I am great, Rob. If anyone has seen my tweets, I'm very excited about this hypothetical season. It gets my heart racing. I'm just excited to get a chance to actually talk about it.
Okay. All right. And we have a newcomer here with us from the class of 2020. Please welcome, making her RHAP debut, Sosa Ihaler. Sosa, how are you?
I'm fabulous. Thank you for that intro. It is such a pleasure to be here. Okay. My palms are a little sweaty. I feel like I'm amongst greats.
Yes. Okay. Be careful with those sweaty palms near all of the podcasting equipment. I don't want to have to see it short out or anything like that. Sosa, could you tell the listeners a little bit about yourself?
All right. Well, you may or may not have seen me play sequester with the great Taryn to my left here. Aside from that, I am a content creator. You can find me on YouTube and Twitter, and I'm a Big Brother super fan. And I'm so happy to have like a fandom I can actually talk about this in real life with.
What kind of content do you normally create?
I usually create mukbangs, where you like eat a bunch of food and like talk. So mukbangs mixed with commentary.
Wow. And so I feel like this is a whole different world to get into. What do you normally eat? Like, what would you do in a, like, I know of the mukbang. So what do you do on a mukbang?
Okay. So real quick, a mukbang is a trend that started off in Asia. I believe Korea, the muk means eat, the bang means show. And apparently it started off because in Asia, it's kind of like taboo to eat by yourself. So people would say, okay, well, I'm just going to go ahead and eat this glorious meal online. I'll broadcast it with a bunch of people. So it trickled into the YouTube world. It hit off in North America. And now people are making millions by eating food. My favorite dish to eat, though, in a mukbang is seafood crab legs.
Okay. All right. Taryn, have you considered any yogurt mukbangs?
I have been propositioned to do such, but I don't know if people are ready for it.
Okay. All right. Well, look, let's keep our fingers crossed that we get this Big Brother All-Star season. But if not, Taryn, let's just keep that on the back burner.
Hey, look,
Taryn's daily yogurt mukbang.
Truly, if the season gets canceled, then you can look forward to 11 a.m. every morning open a yogurt.
So you can walk him through that?
Yes. Okay. Yes.
All right. All right.
I think that would be a hit on Twitch, especially.
Oh, I think so. I think so. Okay. All right. But that's not what we're going to talk about here today. We're going to talk about Bailey, and very excited to talk about Bailey, who, for the uninitiated, not only did she play in Big Brother 20, she most recently appeared on this season of The Challenge. Kirsten, could you give us a real quick the update on Bailey and The Challenge? How did she do?
Yeah, so Bailey actually did really well. She was eliminated during the final because she had a knee injury, which I think was just a torn ligament. And based on when that filmed, should be all clear for Big Brother. So I don't think that should be a concern for her for this summer. She outlasted Swaggy C as she did in Big Brother 20. And yeah, I don't think she was ever going to win the final because it was really killer, like skiing and stuff. But she had a couple of wins. She did decently politically, and then her allies left, and then she struggled a little bit. And then probably the main headline is her and KC, who is also on season 20 of Big Brother, had like a pretty explosive episode one week where Casey chose a different ally over her, and Bailey was not okay with that. Emotions were running high, and it was like a second example of Bailey getting into a very emotional argument with somebody. Yes. So a little bit more of a pattern, but I'm not super concerned about that for 22.
Taryn, the Bailey and Casey relationship is one that I know you and I discussed last week when we did our separating the smoke from the fire. But for those people who have not been following the Big Brother rumor mill especially close, it does seem as though that one of the people that we had planned on hypothetically talking about this week, Casey, this is no longer somebody that we're hypothetically going to be speaking about.
Yeah, and that's huge for Bailey, because both Casey and Josh have, the rumors say, been pulled from the cast, left the cast, are not going to be on the season for whatever reason. And if that is true, then Bailey comes in not with two lifelong enemies. You know, she says that she will be lifelong enemies with Casey, but instead will come in with no set enemies. And that's such a massive difference for her. So if it's true that they are gone, she caught the luckiest break that they were kicked off.
A big break for Bailey in terms of Casey not being there. Hypothetically, she may still have a familiar face from Big Brother 20 in Tyler, but we'll talk about all of that. Sosa, it's time to talk about Bailey in Big Brother 20. Can you give us a little sense of the story of Bailey from Big Brother 20?
Yeah. So if you're not familiar with Bailey, maybe you're familiar with the girl who got into a verbal argument and started bleeding from the mouth, or was it the nose? We're not really sure. Blood just emerged. So to start, you know, Bailey came in as the pageant girl. She was super posh. She, you know, she was a sassy stereotype. She was confident. And then she met the boy, Swaggy, who was like definitely rough around the edges, probably not her normal cup of tea. But being in the Big Brother house, I don't know what's in the waters, you know, people just start to kind of adapt or whatever. So she was in level 6. She was in like the, I don't know. I loved her alliance. I don't know. I don't want to call them the losing alliance, but she was in
the underdog. Yeah.
The underdogs. Perfect. Yes. So she was in the underdogs of the house. And I think she had a pretty good position in the house. She had friendships with Casey, or a showman's that we don't really know. I didn't watch the feed, so maybe Taryn, you guys can talk a little bit about that. But apparently there was a little bit of like a connection there, whether it was a friendship, a romance, to be confirmed.
Yeah. Well, let me just stop down on that for 1 second. Yeah. Because Kirsten, that was at the heart of what the issue was with Casey and Bailey on the challenge, correct?
Yeah.
So there was a lot of discussion on the challenge of, oh, well, you know, Casey and I slept together, you know, there was talks
in the
about
same bed.
Like being each other's type. And then the way that Bailey was talking about how they had like slept together, I think a lot of people on the challenge see sleeping together in a different way than a Big Brother contestant would.
Yeah.
Because obviously in Big Brother, people are sharing beds all of the time. There's not really enough beds for everyone until much later in the game. And I feel like by that point, everyone's all codependent and cuddly. So it's like, they don't really want that anyways. And so that kind of started off with that, as well as, you know, Bailey kind of acting like, oh, but you know, like we talked about how I'm your type, and basically made it seem like if Swaggy wasn't there, that her and Casey would have been together and like maybe they'd be married now. But Casey was like, why are you lying? Like that didn't happen. And I think that she was kind of purposefully misunderstanding the level to which Bailey was talking about things, and it just got out of hand on both sides.
Yes.
Yep.
Okay. All right. So, all right. That's the Casey of it. Okay. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
So she had those alliances, you know, throughout the house, but obviously when she coupled up with Swaggy, they kind of became a duo, and Swaggy wasn't very liked in the house. He came off as arrogant. He rubbed people the wrong way. So when he got evicted pretty early on, now she's like a lone wolf trying to like scurry around. And then still, she was kind of in a good position until the hack twist or challenge. Yeah. When Haley won that challenge and kind of like didn't admit that she had it, everybody started thinking that Bailey was in control and had this secret power and kind of isolated her. And that was Bailey's cracking point in that house. I personally think we can probably delve into that explosive fight for sure. But I think the root of that was maybe there was also something there with her and Tyler, because she was just so butthurt that he kind of took a step back or was kind of cold to her. Then that house meeting happened. She went off. She obviously was thinking irrationally. She wasn't being rational whatsoever. I think that she went a little too far in that yeah. fight, but she was so, so hurt. And it's not the kind of hurt that you get from someone you don't care about. Like, she obviously really cared about him, and that's why she reacted that way. But anyway, so that was her demise. And then she had that huge blowout. And then I'm pretty sure she's a victim.
Right.
That was that.
And then she yeah. got proposed to at the finale.
Yes. Yes.
Mm. Almost forgot she got pregnant while in the house.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes. Yes.
A lot.
And then she had a miscarriage in the jury phase of the game. Taryn, another big point in the Bailey story that we need to talk about the power up, the app that yes. she got from America, because I feel like that at the time that people that her stock was through the roof on the stock watch. People really loved her position in the game. She had a power app. People felt like that she was going to be able to use that to her advantage, but it didn't work out in her favor.
Yes. And people remember Bailey for the fight and, you know, subsequent eviction. And they remember her for the HOH reign that was devastating to her game. But they do sometimes, and I think often, forget that Bailey was doing really well, as Sosa said, and as you pointed out, that she was in a very good spot, even though she shouldn't have been. She was easily the best player on the Faute side of things until
bar,
she had, yes, yes, until she had the HOH reign that tanked her game. And so basically she got into power and she decided to tell Rachel from level 6 about her power. And she really just screwed up the way that she went about doing things, because she also nominated Rachel. It freaked Rachel out. She ended up not taking out her intended target and lost the trust of all of her level 6 connections, and also made herself a target, a threat to them because of her power heading into the following week. We then got the whole week she was concerned. People thought that she was using the hacker power the following week. And Haley took the fall for it because it was her and she didn't want Bailey to be blamed. But by then it was too late and they got into this fight with Tyler. I do think the Tyler stuff is really interesting because, as Sosa mentioned, Bailey was really hurt by Tyler. Tyler and Bailey did have a good relationship from the start of the season. She thought that she was cool with him. And then in the very first HOH, he kind of screwed her over to win it. They then had kind of a strained relationship, which he worked very hard.
But Taryn, sorry to cut you off. How did he ruin it?
In the HOH competition?
Yeah. How did he ruin her?
That was the one where you had to put the balls in other people's tubes, right?
Oh, and he put some in hers.
Yes.
Right?
He kind of.
Because I think they were working together in the competition to knock people out. And then right at the end, he was like, well, I'm winning this.
Okay.
Yeah, he kind of like turned on her a little bit early in order to make sure that he would win it. And she was like, whoa, you're sketching me out, man. Like, are you the kind of person that's going to betray me? And then he spent a long time winning her back over, especially using his connection to Casey, who was still very close to Bailey, to get back on her good side, and then stabs her again. And she was very upset about it. And now, I think, interestingly, Bailey has, I think, mended things a bit with Tyler. I think, you know, Bailey, Tyler, Swaggy, and Angela are all on relatively good terms now as they head back into the house. But I have to think that in the back of Bailey's mind, she has to be thinking, he did it. He's done it to me so many times. It doesn't matter how cool we are. I am never going to be able to trust this guy. And I have to imagine that Tyler is thinking, I think we're cool, but I have to imagine that at some point she's going to turn on me because she can't trust me. And so they might go in as friends and they might leave once again as enemies.
Yeah, I also think that it could be a situation, though, where they do know each other and they are friends outside of the house, and that is going to carry a little bit more forward than what you might expect. Like, they might be able to trust each other a little bit more than you would think.
You know, I think it's interesting also with of these two duos here of Bailey and Swaggy and Tyler and Angela, that even though it was Tyler and Bailey that got into the fight, I do wonder if that I feel like that without like their other half, who may be sort of driving confrontation, that I feel like that maybe in this scenario without the rest of the BB20 cast, they might be able to get along well.
It is possible. I do think it's possible. I think that Bailey is somebody who grab a friend, she's loyal. She just expects loyalty in return. And Big Brother is a game where even your allies are sometimes not loyal. And when Bailey's friends and allies are not loyal, it really hurts her. And she really gets upset about it. And I don't think that's a good recipe for Bailey and Tyler being in a partnership, because Tyler is always the guy in that HOH competition who's looking to get that one step ahead. And Bailey is the person who's going to go
two steps ahead.
Yes.
One thing, though, that I think is really to her advantage in this way is that, you know, both of the other seasons of reality TV she's been on before, she was with Swaggy C right from the start. And so the loss of him is like a very emotional part of the game. She gets to, you know, hypothetically come into this game by herself without him as that, you know, anchor for her. And so she's not going to have to face like the devastation of losing him. I think that that's going to allow her to come into this game a little bit more level-headed than we would have seen otherwise.
Okay. So what kind of players does Bailey look for in an ally?
I was saying her number one thing is loyalty. Like, as Taryn mentioned, she's like, I think she's a super empath, perhaps, who just feels everything so deeply and immensely. And I also think it would be nice to see her play with strategic players. She was kind of like the brains of that group, I want to say, for as long as she was around. So if she could partner up with some people who are on that, like, let's get it kind of level, it's going to be a good show.
Taryn, could you talk through her HOH reign? Because I just remember at that point in time, she ends up winning that competition where it's like the bobsled, like to get it down to like as close as you could to like 9 seconds. She ends up winning that competition. She's in this really great spot. And then the HOH week really goes sideways for her.
It's a very classic case of HOH-itis. She very much felt like the queen of the house.
Let's face it, she kind of was.
Yes. But I think when you act like it, people don't necessarily take kindly.
Rachel goes out on her HOH week, right?
Yes. Okay. Yes. Rachel, who was one of the people she was closer to in level six. She had connections to Casey, to Tyler. She was getting there with Tyler, and she felt kind of close to Rachel. She wanted Brett gone because they all wanted Brett gone over and over. Just couldn't make it happen because they kept screwing up. But even amongst her allies, she was alienating herself. She was rubbing different people the wrong way, and things just they just were not working out. And again, like the power was a big thing where she told some of them, but not all of them, and then she told Rachel, and then that got out. And she was mad that it got out, and it was a big mess.
Kirsten, do you feel like that she should try to avoid being the HOH? It seems like that her game was at its peak when she was somebody who wasn't necessarily the focal point of being in power in the house.
I mean, if you think that she's learned nothing since then, absolutely avoid the HOH. But I have faith in Bailey. I think that she's learned a lot. And I also think that playing a strategic game with the challenge people who have like such a different kind of political game since they've been playing for years, and it's those long-term relationships. I'm sure she's picked up a thing or two from them. I'm sure that she's learned at least a little bit from her first Big Brother experience. So I think that she probably could handle winning an HOH, but I don't think she should be trying to win all of them.
Have we seen anybody come back from the challenge to play Big Brother yet? Do we have any idea how that changes a person?
This, unless you're going to count Lolo Jones going from the challenge to Celebrity Big Brother, which I don't think people count, then this is going to be the first time, and she will be joined by, hypothetically, you know, another challenge alum coming back to Big Brother.
Who would that be?
In Davon.
Davon. Okay, hypothetically. But they never played on the same challenge season, correct?
They didn't, but I feel like I have seen them interact online in the past, and I could see that working out.
Okay.
Yeah, the thing about Davon was that she is also close to Josh, who is, Bailey is feuding with. However, I think that without Josh in the house, that kind of clears the way, because I don't think Davon has anything against Bailey herself.
What's the beef with Bailey and Josh?
Josh took Casey's side, for one thing. And then even before that, Josh got upset with Casey, with Bailey and Swaggy, because they were working secretly with Wes, and Josh is enemies with Wes, and he thought that they weren't telling him about it.
Josh is enemies with Wes. Wes is not enemies with Josh. Yes. You're right.
So it's one-sided.
Right. I was sitting there, I was like, no, actually, yeah, that works. Never mind. Ignore me.
From Josh's point of view, they went to his deepest, darkest enemy. And from Wes's point of view, he was like, who's Josh?
And also from Wes's point of view there, it's like, first of all, he's Wes. He contacts literally everyone. And second of all, I'm pretty sure him and Bailey are from the same hometown, so that's like an additional connection for them.
So can you talk about the narrative for Bailey coming back this season and what doing well or a win would mean for her as a player?
That's an interesting one. It depends like who you're asking the narrative of, because like online she has a lot. I don't know, the thing about Bailey, she does receive a lot of hate. And like, I find myself following her, but then unfollowing and then following and then unfollowing, because like, it'll be like a random Tuesday afternoon. I'm scrolling through my phone and it's like, oh my God, I cannot. Like, it just, I don't know. Sometimes you can like feel her stress and her negativity through her tweets when she's like, you know, in her feelings about the trolls, which is so understandable. Mm-hmm. I think that the narrative, like, everyone is definitely amped. She's going to bring good TV. I just hope that she can learn to keep her emotions under control, because it's going to be her downfall as it seems to continue to be. Like, even on the challenge, you think that after her first experience with Big Brother, she would just keep it under wraps. But I mean, I don't know. The energy is intense. I can understand her outbursts, I guess.
I do think also that the reputation she has for being so emotional could help her a little bit, because again, people seem to have forgotten that she was smart, that she was in a good position, and that she, you know, had done well prior to that. And so it might kind of mask her threat level a little bit coming in, which I don't think is necessarily a bad thing.
Yeah, Taryn, from the perspective of the competition, do you feel like that they see Bailey and they look at her as somebody that they want to potentially work with?
I think it's different. I think it's different for each person, especially because even if Josh and Casey aren't there, I think the fact that they were, even if they're not, is still going to have an impact, especially because we've heard that Josh in particular was one of the biggest pre-gamers in the entire cast. If Josh is pre-gaming hard and he has created some kind of connection, alliance, whatever, Bailey is sure to not be a part of it and probably was being considered as one of their early targets. So even if Josh and Casey aren't there, the remnants of that group might still feel a little bit wary toward Bailey, which is not going to be good.
Do you have a sense of who the people that are hypothetically in the cast that might have been part of the Casey and Josh pregaming?
I mean, certainly Christmas, if she's there.
Oh!
Christmas.
yeah. Yeah, I'm with you.
Sorry, who? I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. You know, even, you know, potentially Tyler connected through Casey. Again, I think Tyler will try to stay cool with her, but I think Tyler is somebody that, again, in the back of his mind, he's always going to be worried that she knows that I'm eventually going to turn on her. And so I have to do it before she does it first. And really, I mean, anyone else they reached out to, I couldn't speculate as to who, because the cast has changed so much. But at one point it was looking like there was going to be a big group amalgamating together that Devon might have even been a part of. So who knows?
No, I heard that anyone who was pre-gaming was kicked off the cast.
Oh, really?
No.
Yeah, they have a snitch hotline where you can call up and then just say if you hear anybody that's pre-gaming, that's what they do.
Yeah, that's what you get right on off the show. I heard. Yeah.
Yeah. Tighter than the NBA bubble to get onto Big Brother. But
don't kill me.
So in terms of the people that are there, Kirsten, do you see people that would be natural allies for Bailey?
So something that I had noticed just the other day is Bailey is one of the people who was on Nicole Franzel's podcast in the last like 2.5 months. So that's at least, you know, one long conversation that has existed there. And I do think that that could be something. I could see her really getting along with Danny Donato. I see that. I don't know why, but I just feel like they'll vibe. And if they don't, I'll be devastated.
Yeah.
I think Bailey's best bet is to go full force, like full women strong kind of deal. Especially now that Casey is gone, I think, hey, women need to work together. I think Janelle will eat that up. I think Danny D will be on board. And if she doesn't seem to have any visible enemies anymore, and she seems like a free agent being able, that can be picked up, I think there might be a crew of women that might be able to reel her in from there.
Yeah, the idea of a women's alliance, I'll say, is actually pretty interesting in this season. I know it always is a specter in the Big Brother preseason of, oh, is there going to be a women's alliance this season? But you have so many women who are in relationships already where, unlike a traditional Big Brother season, which is cast with a lot of single and at times thirsty people that come into the house, that we have a lot of people that are either in longstanding relationships, people that are married, and so there's less of a chance that if there's a women's group that they're going to end up getting pulled over into some sort of a showmance and defecting.
I totally agree with you.
I kind of take issue with that a little bit, Rob. I don't think that it's fair to say that women's alliances don't work out because people are in showmances. I think that it's something that has been discussed heavily, that a lot of the time when it comes to the women's alliance, there's this pressure that they feel like they have to bring in every single woman on the cast. Mm-hmm. And, you know, just like men, women are people and you don't get along with every person in the world. And so a lot of the time it ends up with someone getting pulled into that group who actually just isn't a cohesive part of that group and sees, you know, this isn't going to go well for me because all these people are going to go further than me. It's to my benefit to betray that. It's just like how if you see on a season that's split half and half returnees and new players, the new players should stick together and try to take out returnees, but there's always going to be one or two who defect over to the returnees and kind of ruin it for them. Yeah. So I just don't think it's a fair assessment to say that it's because of showmances that it wouldn't work out.
But I do see Rob's point a little bit though, because like you mentioned that sometimes they'll bring someone in who chickens out and says, this person is better for my game, who's outside. Who's that person? Usually a man who they feel could be a comp beast.
It absolutely can be. I just didn't want it to be like, oh, that's why it doesn't work. I just didn't want to leave it as that.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember. Yeah. Was it in Big Brother 18 that there was the alliance where I feel like was it Nicole and Devon and Devon and was Big Meech in there and Tiffany Russo? Yeah. And I feel Bridget,
was it Bridget or Bronte who was the last one?
I don't think either of them. But yeah. I could be wrong. But yeah, I mean, interestingly, I think, you know, you have Devon and Nicole potentially both on this cast. You have Janelle. You have a lot of people who have expressed interest in working with women before, potentially even Keisha, all of which had failed women's alliances. So they may come in with that sort of fear of this will never work, or they may come in like, no. This, we are vets. We can make this work. Mm-hmm. I don't think there's anybody in the world that can make Devon and Nicole work well together in an all girls alliance. Mm-hmm. But I do think that there might be an attempt, and that's where I think Bailey can find an in, because even if she goes in and it blows up, I don't think Bailey's the one that's going to take the hit. I think there are bigger targets in that sort of crew of women that if it blows up, then Bailey can kind of just like ride the wave and then land somewhere else. But I think she might need that early safety, that early group early on, because I'm not sure where else her connections are.
Kirsten, do you see players that Bailey needs to be especially watching out for in this group of hypothetical cast members?
I do kind of feel like Tyler is one of the people she should be most concerned about, because even if he is going to be loyal and work with her to the end, which we obviously have no guarantee of, I think anyone who she will get especially upset if they betray her is who she needs to be watching out for the most. That would be my feeling for her game.
Yeah, it's such an interesting question, Sosa, that do you feel like that Tyler could potentially be out to get Bailey so early in the game that it just seems like that after everything that these people have been through, that just seems like so aggressive to go after her?
I agree with that statement. And I was actually rewatching the clip when like Bailey and him went at it, and just watching how distraught he was when he's like, man, like, I'm not the villain. Like, I look like a villain. Like, he's really concerned with how the public views him. So maybe you know, this narrative is floating around, he's going to be on his A1. He wants to be the nice golden boy. So maybe he'll be Prince Charming to Bailey on a very platonic level.
Mm-hmm. I do think. He will want to work with her. I think that he would love, I think he would love to work with her all the way to the end. Tyler's a pretty loyal guy.
Yeah.
And I think that he would want it to happen. But I again, you get in that house and the paranoia starts to eat at you, and you remember the last time you were there, and you remember the feelings that you had the last time you were there, and you remember the fights, and you remember being yelled at. And I think that that could easily crumble this trust that they might have built.
Taryn, I think that he would want to get rid of her, but I think it's going to be one of these scenarios where he's going to be like wanting to not look like that he had anything to do with it. I could see him sort of like saying, yeah, I don't mind, but mm-hmm. I feel like that I can't imagine that he is going to be like explicitly targeting her. I don't think he's going to want to have that on his reputation.
Derek and Donnie, you might say.
Yes, exactly that.
Well, and the other thing too, just like looking at the whole rumored cast list, I'm not seeing anyone in particular who's like going to be like, oh yeah, Bailey's the one I need to go after here. Mm-hmm. Right. Like I do mm-hmm. think that she's in a good spot to go at least through the early portion of the game. I think she'll be pretty solid. And then from there, I think it'll depend more on how the game actually plays out rather than anything from the past or the start of the game. Like who on this list really is going to be like, yeah, Bailey's my number one target and she's who I need to take out. Like, I just don't see it.
Mm-hmm.
Is Haley in the recent hypothetical list of casts, or was she removed?
Okay. Haley's at a resort somewhere.
Okay. Mm, yes, with Angela.
Yes.
With Angela. Okay.
All right. Rockstar?
No.
No.
The other one.
Tyler's Angela.
Yeah.
Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Taryn, what do you think the key to success is for Bailey in this season?
I mean, I think that she needs to get in with different groups. I think she needs to, what she was good at in Big Brother 20 was her social connections. She was somebody that people felt like they could connect to, felt like they could get in with. And she was able to juggle those really well for a long time. It wasn't until she got into power that things started to go wrong. So I think this, the strategic like moves that she's making could be better. That's where she needs to improve. But I think if we're looking at like, what should she lean into the social side of things, lean into that, try not to overplay, which I normally would not say too much, but in Bailey's case, I think that she has a strategic mind and she wants to be playing the game. But she doesn't always make the right call. She doesn't always have the right instincts on who to trust and where to go. So if she sticks to her social instincts and stays along those lines, I think that's where she can succeed.
And you know who would be a really fun ride or die for Bailey? Nicole Anthony. Like, they're both like super empathetic. Like, I feel like they're gonna feel like vibe with each other very well, and I think that that could benefit both of them. I think that'd be a really cute pair.
Yeah,
I agree.
Yeah, that would be exciting. I also think that Bailey has the ability to win physical competitions, and Taryn, you've talked so much about over the last couple of years just how physical the competitions are down the stretch, that I do think she has the profile to be able to, you know, if she can get down to final seven, she is a player I think that can go on a run.
Yeah. I think that's like, that's a good time to turn it on for her as well. Like, that's when, you know, that's when the social stuff starts to strip away and you can start making those moves. And I think it's a good sort of, arc for her. And you know, working with Nicole, I think would also be interesting. I think Nicole is up to work. I think Nicole is very easy to work with. So I have to imagine that a lot of people will either
get rid of Nicole Anthony.
Either want to get rid of her early because she's an easy target, she doesn't have many connections, or a lot of people will be vying to pick her up as a number because she's so easy to work with.
Okay. The only thing though is that like Bailey's now literally leaving the challenge and entering the Big Brother house. So she can go in there and like fake the funk and pretend she's not a comp beast, but we've all seen her now. She's a comp beast. So I think maybe she should even, I think if she starts trying to downplay it, then it's gonna look like she's playing the game. Like, you did so well in the challenge. I think, like Taryn said, focus on the social aspect, do well in competitions, but just really try and be everyone's best friend. I think that's her way of staying under the radar. Just focus on being a really good housemate, make people tea as they do in the UK, like whatever you have to do here, like arrange people's beds. I don't know. It sounds like a simp way to play, but I do think she needs to just be everyone's really good friend, because she's going to go in there as someone who's maybe labeled intimidating because we've seen her outbursts, not one, but two, and she's coming from the challenge. So
yeah, there's a lot of big personalities, big players in that house. Right. I think Bailey can afford to sit back a little bit. What I worry about with Bailey is that she did just come off the challenge, which is a much faster pace than Big Brother. If she's still in that mode of like, the challenge, which is also like a different environment.
To be fair with that, though, like for us, she just got off the challenge. We just watched the final that filmed over a year ago. So I do think that she will have had enough time to maybe decompress a bit from that. So hopefully that's not as big of a concern as it would be if it had just filmed.
Kirsten, could she play up the injury, though, from the challenge in terms of that? Like, oh, I'm not my knee is still bothering me.
I would love nothing more. I mean, we've seen that type of play be successful. I mean, look at Christmas Abbott, who's also hypothetically in this cast.
Yeah, and Christmas will be like, no. That's a great point.
You know what?
But to be fair, we don't know what Christmas is going to do because she's not going to be on painkillers this season, you know? So like, maybe that's not how she would normally react.
And also Christmas, everybody counted her out because she broke her leg, but Sosa, she still won a running HOH competition.
Beast.
So people start questioning whether or not her injury was legit, or
I think they were questioning a lot, I think, in that season.
I mean, no, I don't think anybody on that season was questioning a whole lot.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
Not until it was too late, at least.
Yeah.
Don't kill me.
Kirsten, what else do we need to set up for Bailey to come back?
You know, we've talked about who we think she'll work well with, who we think she won't work well with, you know, her fatal flaws, what her benefit is.
Does she have a catchphrase? Is it gang? Probably. Gang?
Period. Period. Probably. We'll see every time she says period.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll get back to the trip. I feel like she won't be the only one.
Yes.
No, yeah, I don't think so.
Will she have swaggy merch to come into the house?
Oh, yes. I meant to bring this up. Thank you. So on the challenge, her and Swaggy had a blanket with their own faces all over it that they slept under every night. And I am anxiously awaiting to see if she's allowed to bring that blanket into the Big Brother 22 house.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But she'll definitely have Swaggy C t-shirts. Like, come on.
Yeah. Okay, that's good. I like that. We'll see how many other people will have any sort of like branded merch to come into the house.
Ooh, does Danny D come in with Dominic t-shirts?
Yeah, she should start. She should start it up.
I would buy a Dominic t-shirt.
Right?
Yeah. Okay. Don't call me. All right. Taryn, what else do we need to set up about Bailey?
I think that she has, I think she feels like she has a lot to prove. I think that she comes in, she is really hungry for it. There's a reason she gets so worked up about betrayals and friendships and how she does in the game. She wants it bad. Mm-hmm. And I think that, you know, I think that alone is like, yes, I want to see that on my screen. It's just, she needs to be able to control that sort of passion that she has to do well on these shows and channel it into the right places.
Are you prepared to have Swaggy C as somebody covering the live feeds with you?
Oh my goodness!
I'm sure he'll be glued to him.
Yeah, I bet he'll be live tweeting the whole thing.
Yeah,
and that is a gift.
Yeah,
that's going to be hilarious on the timelines.
Yeah, hopefully, Swaggy tweeting.
Maybe
Swaggy can join us and fill us in on like all the pre-gaming that happened once the season.
Yeah,
started.
That'll be great.
Mm-hmm. Did people see, like, it was the other day, Swaggy was on live on Instagram and people were like, well, where's Bailey? And he was like, oh, she's at Whole Foods. And then he was live for like so long. And then someone tweets like, at Bailey, I hope you're okay. You've been at Whole Foods for so long. And then Bailey's account,
especially in the current environment.
Yeah, they only let so many people in the store.
Sometimes you're in line, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
And so then Bailey's account retweets it with like, I'm good, it's fine, whatever. But it was like the most Swaggy tweet I've ever seen. I have to pull it up, the exact tweet, because it was so funny. And it just made it like even more certain.
I feel like the most Swaggy tweet would have been like, just bought $10,000 worth of groceries at Whole Foods. That's why it took so long.
Period.
Yeah.
Period.
So the original person said, they've been at Whole Foods an awful long time. Sure hope she's okay. And then like within the hour had the response, ?, I'm fine, LOL. Which I feel like is just not how Bailey would say that.
Yeah. Okay, well, that's going to be fun to watch. We'll have to see how, like, the significant others of all these people that we've come to know. There's more than a few of them that have a Big Brother significant other that are going to be on this season. We'll see how they handle the social media aspect of all this.
Not only social media, but I think often what can happen is, you know, they're all buddy-buddy with each other. You know, like Swaggy and Angela are like, hey, we're cool, right? And then Tyler turns on Bailey or Bailey turns on Tyler and it's like, what have you done?
And it's not just like spouses, it's also like Big Brother best friends of like you know, people like Cody has like Derek and his brother, then also like if Memphis is there, is close with Dan, so they all have like if not like real spouses, almost like Big Brother house work spouses. It's interesting.
Yeah. Work spouse.
Yeah. War amongst the alumni. Yeah.
It'd be great. Okay. So anything else that you want to add about Bailey?
We're rooting for you, girl. We're all rooting for you.
Be exciting. Be excited to see her make a deep run. Okay. All right. Well, this was really, really fun to talk about Bailey. Let's get some predictions in terms of how she can do. Kirsten, what do you think for Bailey? What's her finish?
Eighth place.
Was she on the jury last time out, Taryn?
And yes, she voted for KC.
How do you not remember. It was her key was the last that came out. True. And there's the clip of Tyler being like, I don't need your vote. And then it being like,
Come on. He said, I don't need your vote.
Yeah.
Oh, you shouldn't say that.
Like,
he didn't need it.
I think you need their vote.
Yeah. I would say to everybody, I need your vote. Please vote for me.
That's what you have to say. Like, hello, I need your vote.
Yeah.
I'm with you, Kirsten. I think that, you know, some of the people that we talked about, I've said, you know, either they go out early or maybe they get really far. I think with Bailey, it's always going to be that middle section. I think she's probably going to be fine early on. I think that she can probably get into a decent position. It's just a matter of, can she get over that hump in the middle? Can she get into the back half of the game where she might be able to excel? That's the danger point for her. So that middle period.
Okay.
Yeah, I agree. I see her getting out maybe right before jury, just because she's in such a house with all stars, right? So
no, I think she's gonna make jury, but it's gonna be like very early jury.
I think they're gonna get her out before jury.
Get her up before jury.
That's okay. What I think.
There might be some people. That is a good point. There might be some people in that cast who are concerned about Bailey on a jury. Bailey considered to have voted bitterly, I think, by probably a lot of the people in that house.
That could be the spot if Tyler wants to get rid of her. Like, hey, just don't let her get on the jury.
All stars are usually very... scared of bitter juries, mm-hmm. and people that have voted in that way before, there's no way Janelle wants, Janelle is the opposite of a bitter juror, right? She doesn't want, she was like pulling for Dan. She was probably pulling for Tyler. I don't know. Maybe not, but, I assume so. So, you know, those kinds of people are going to be probably looking at like, who do we want on the jury? And that could be an issue for her.
Okay. All right. Well, this was very fun to talk through everything with Bailey. Kirsten, where can people keep up with what you're doing?
Yeah, so they can follow me on all social media at Kirsten Said What. They can catch my Twitch channel, twitch.tv/Kirsten Said What, where there will be some Big Brother content there this summer. So it's already started. And so people need to get over there if they want all of my takes.
Okay. Sosa, I have to go check out the mukbang.
Yes. If
you
like
talk
to see
and eat at the same time.
Yeah, but it's not easy at all. I thought it was gonna be easy. No. Don't kill me. It's a talent.
With your mouth full, or do you just talk in between?
I talk in between. Some people go all out and do the whole mouth open with food, but I think I talk in between. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I just sit and lose my train of thought and keep eating, but yeah.
And then do you talk about the food or you talk about other topics?
So when I start, I introduce the food. You know, you let them know what you're working with, and then we go into our conversation.
Do you let the food plug their social media at the end?
Yeah.
Always.
Wow. Okay. All right. And where do we go to check that out?
You can check out my YouTube at Dolled by Sosa.
Dolled by Sosa. Okay. And YouTube is where you primarily have it, or it's on Twitch?
YouTube. Okay. Twitch is new for me.
All right. Is it the same name?
I don't do Twitch. Just YouTube and Twitter. But also, maybe I'll just plug this. I did recently start on another live streaming app called Bigo. So if there's any Bigo people out there.
How do you spell that?
B-I-G-O.
B-I-G-O.
Yeah, it's a live streaming app. Okay. It's awesome. And my username there is SosaBaby3.
Okay. Should I get on Bigo?
You should.
What will I stream there?
What you do every day.
Okay.
Or your daily life, or you making a coffee and just talking about what you're reading in the newspaper or something.
Hey, hold on. Let me let my family know. Hey, guys, I'm going to get on Bigo. Yeah.
Get out your newspaper.
It's new. Yeah, it's because I'm going to start streaming everything.
It's another thing.
I'll tell you later. Okay. All right. And of course, Taryn, where can people see, but before you get on Bigo, where can people see what you're streaming?
You can find me on Twitch, twitch.tv/Taryn Armstrong. Plenty of stuff going on over there, so make sure you go and check it out.
All right. Everybody, there you have it. Talking about Bailey Dayton coming back. Lots of fun with Taryn and Kirsten and Sosa today. We are going to keep rolling along that tomorrow. We're going to have another hypothetically speaking preview about two other players who may be in the Big Brother house this season. We're going to talk about Danny Donato and Kacer. That's going to be a really fun one coming up tomorrow, so be on the lookout for that. Make sure you subscribe to the podcast, robhaswebsite.com/iTunes, or subscribe on Spotify. Go to robhaswebsite.com/Spotify. Lots of other great stuff coming your way as well. We are covering Tough as Nails, the new show from the mind of Phil Kogan. Phil's been joining us. Yes, that's right. If you haven't been paying attention, Phil Kogan has been joining us on our weekly recaps on Thursday. Join Mike Bloom, myself, and Jessica Leese to talk about all of that. That's been a very fun thing to do on Thursdays this season. And of course, we have so much going on here in our Rob is a Podcast patron community. If you're thinking about getting on board for the Big Brother season, it's a great time to do it. Of course, we are going to have so much Big Brother content coming your way. You know about my daily or my nightly recaps of the episodes. We've got Taryn's live feed update, the LFC roundtable, plus much more Big Brother content coming as well this season. The way all that gets made possible is by the patrons of Rob is a Podcast. Head on over to robiswebsite.com/patron to get involved with our Rob is a Podcast patron community, which is on Facebook. And we're going to get our Discord server back up and running as well. So want to have you be a part of that, be part of the fun. Got our big patron cast coming up at the end of the month. But pro tip before you do it, do it August 1st, because Patreon, they charge you for July and they'll charge you for August. So wait, don't get charged twice. If you want to get in, August 1st, great time to get on. It's also my anniversary, so happy 10-year anniversary to the First Lady of Podcasting. Thank you so much for listening to the podcast and everybody that was with us today, and Scott St. Pierre for putting this all together. Take care, everybody. Have a good one. Bye.